I just... Why'd I get mixed up with that bitch?
Because she got a great ass! And you got your head all the way up it! Jesus. When I think of asses, woman's ass, something comes out of me.
This week the gents are all sucking on the same candy cane. It's episode 40 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hey everybody, it's Cut Print Film episode 40. And it's finally 2015. Happy New Year, everybody.
Nope, you're wrong.
Nope, for everybody confused, it's still 2014, oh. And it's the beginning of wait, what month is
yeah,
this?
Yeah, January
2015. Oh.
I'll be leaving.
It's December. Today's actually December 7th.
All right.
We all were drinking cough syrup before the show started. Sorry.
We only took a week off, yeah. Not a whole month. All right.
Yeah, we're back. I hope you all had a pleasant Thanksgiving.
A dinosaur tale.
What?
We're back.
Oh,
you ever saw that one?
Come on, we're all going to be adults right now.
Okay.
Take off that bib, young man, and
let's
put on your big
ourselves.
Boy shirt.
It's a lobster bib.
What's your name?
Hi, I'm Dave Costell.
I'm Jeff Rollins.
I'm Chris Evangelista. And when our powers combine, we are Cut Print Film.
That's right. We are a film podcast, and we come from cutprintfilm.com, the website of your dreams, if you like films.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Cutprint MILF, which is a totally different website.
Oh, boy. I hope nobody starts that up to make a mockery of us. That would be tragic.
All right. So tonight we're going to be drinking some distilled water and talking about still.
I don't know where you're going with this joke. Oh, all right.
Boy, you're really reaching for the sky there. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, tonight we're talking about Still Alice. We're talking about Mel Brooks. Dracula Dead and Loving It for some reason.
Yeah.
And then we'll be doing...
After
the break, we'll be doing our biggest surprises and biggest disappointments in movies in 2014.
That's right. As the year winds down, everyone involved with film websites and stuff, they all do their best ofs, their worst ofs, and we'll be doing that too.
Yeah, so we're no different.
Yeah, we're not trendsetters at all.
You're not finding anything new at cutprintfilm.com.
But yeah, so tonight we're not going to be talking about our best ofs or our worst ofs. These are just films that disappointed us because we thought they were going to be something other, and then films that surprised us because we just weren't expecting them to be as good as they were.
Or weren't expecting anything at all
in some cases.
Yeah.
Best ofs will come later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably the last podcast of the year.
Ever. The last podcast ever before we all commit suicide.
Yeah, so we made a pact in the first episode.
Yeah, we're all going to drink Kool-Aid laced with Jim Jones.
Put on our keds.
When Hail Bob comes by, we're going to jump right on board.
That's right. The only place you can find Hail Bob jokes still... 20 years later.
I know. I love a good Hail Bop joke.
Who doesn't?
And a good Bop joke, too.
Marshall Applewhite.
Remember him?
Yes, he was wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
What's happening?
Speaking of remembering things, Chris, you saw Still Alice, and Alice starts forgetting stuff. Why does she start forgetting stuff?
Alice has early onset Alzheimer's, and that's a mouthful. And so Still Alice is a film. It stars Julianne Moore, and it stars Kristen Stewart, or K-Stew, as all her fans still
call. I love a good bowl of K-Stew.
Mm, yeah.
There's pickles in it, turpentine.
Yeah, I love the broth in a good K-Stew. Mm. So, yeah, this is a horribly depressing movie. Holy shit. Oh, my God. I can't remember the last time. I would say the last time a movie affected me emotionally this much would be the documentary Dear Zachary, which is a movie that kicks you in the face and gut simultaneously as you watch it.
Yeah, it does. I can't believe you're comparing this to that.
And,
I'll never watch it now.
It's a very depressing. It's a good. I wouldn't say it's a great movie, but it's a good movie. And what makes it good are the performances, especially Julianne Moore, who. Julianne Moore is a great actress to begin with, but I honestly think this is probably her best performance.
She's wonderful.
Ever.
And ever?
Ever. And that says a lot because almost all of her performances are great. So she's very good in this as the titular Alice who is losing her I was going to say mind, but...
Well, it's her marbles, really.
Yeah. And Kristen Stewart plays one of her daughters who is an actress... And it's a good. They're both very good in this. They play off each other well. Because the way the film progresses is Alice's other family, her husband, who's played by Alec Baldwin, and her other daughter who's played by Kate Bosworth.
Really? I had no idea either of those were in the
I didn't know either until I sat down and watched it. And they sort of once Alice gets diagnosed and starts, you know, losing her memory, her other family, they sort of tiptoe around the illness. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to think about it. Mm-hmm. They try and, like, just go on with their lives and try and make Alice comfortable. But Kristen Stewart is the only member of the family who, like, wants to address the illness, and she talks to her mother about it. And it's really nice, sort of, they just play off each other really well. And this is probably, I would say this is also probably Kristen Stewart's best performance, which isn't saying as much as Julianne Moore's, but she's very good at this.
Yeah, she was pretty good in Camp X-Ray, too.
Yeah,
I have a Kristen Stewart story, too.
Oh, tell us.
You met her?
No, I never met her, but I saw Clouds of Sils Maria.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And she's in that with Juliette Binoche. She's fantastic. Okay.
Yeah,
when she's not on screen, you're missing her. You want her to be back. So that's pretty good. She's got three films in 2014 where
she's having a good
year. Fantastic.
Yeah. So I guess she decided she wanted to be a legit actress finally, not just, you know, coast off Twilight. Yeah. So
you should tweet her and let her know how you feel.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll respond to me too.
Hi, Kristen. How are you? What do you love to do?
Well, we're not Mad Men, Dave.
Yeah, so should we watch Still Alice or should we just
avoid
it?
See, I don't know because if you like good performances, I guess it's worth watching. And again, it's a good movie. It's not a great movie. It's really simple. There's not a lot to it. It's basically she gets sick and the whole movie is just like her losing her mind basically through the movie. And there's not a lot to it. And on my review on cutprintfilm.com, someone commented on the review and said, I have a family member who has Alzheimer's and that's all it is. But this isn't a documentary. It's a movie.
Yeah.
And a movie has to have more than just one situation. You got to have a narrative, and there's no real narrative in the film.
So it's more about the performance.
Yeah, it's if Julianne Moore and Kristen Stewart weren't giving such great performances, I probably wouldn't recommend this movie at all. But because they're so good in it, and again, it is also emotionally affecting. It's
should I swallow the key to my gun safe before I watch?
Yes, you should. Yeah, if you're someone like me who just suffers from depression in general, it's not a good movie to watch just because days after I watched it, I was just kept thinking about how, especially, I'm not going to spoil it, but the very last scene of the film is just, it's just devastating just the way it plays out because it's touching and it's also just, it's just an upsetting film.
I'm going to guess that you should probably wait until maybe summer.
Yeah.
Maybe autumn to watch this, and not in the middle of January or February.
Yeah,
when you're stuck in the house for months.
That is a good call. This is not a SADS movie.
Yes.
I had a similar experience with The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, which I haven't seen Still Alice, but it seems like it's equally as miserable film.
Yeah.
But at least with that film, with The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, there's a little bit of a takeaway at the end. Where
there's a glimmer of hope, maybe.
Well, it's like this is the kind of pain that helps you grow. Whereas
Still Alice, because like there's, you know, there's no cure for Alzheimer's, so it's like, oh well, that's, you know, she's screwed basically. Yeah.
So she's just, the last scene is her trying to remember like her Yahoo password and she can't.
Yeah, it's really tragic.
Cuts to black.
Well, the last scene of the film actually, she turns to Alec Baldwin and she says, "At least I'm still Alice."
Oh.
That doesn't happen. I'm kidding.
At least I'm still Alice.
I'm kidding, everyone. That's not
poetic.
All right. And then Alec Baldwin says, "I'm still Alice too."
No, he says, "I'm still Alec."
Yeah.
Nice.
And then the Still Alice theme song blares in.
Still Alice.
Wah, wah, wah. It's like the Goldfinger theme, but they say Still Alice.
All right. So
but,
Still Alice.
It's definitely worth seeing for Julianne Moore and Kristen Stewart's performances alone.
Good.
So there you go.
Just wait for the summer, like Jeff said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
wait until you're hopped up on goofballs to watch it, and you'll feel great.
You know, the hip new street drug goofballs. All right. We're gonna move on to the final entry in our director series with Mel Brooks, Dracula Dead and Loving It. But first, I'm gonna play this.
Director series.
That's it. I think that's enough. They've heard enough.
I agree.
I'll let that play out for a little bit.
That'll do it.
I hate that. I can't tell you how much I hate it, and I made it.
All right, so Dracula dead and loving it.
One day I hope I'm dead and loving it too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Loving this movie or
just it's just being dead. it's gonna be great.
Yeah. So this is Mel Brooks's last movie. I mean, Mel Brooks is still alive, but this is the last movie he ever directed.
Yeah, and he probably will not do another one. But
I doubt it. He's pretty much locked into a producer role.
Right.
I was surprised how much older he looked in this.
He didn't look bad.
No, he didn't look bad, but he just looked...
This was also 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We're acting like this is brand new.
Yeah.
This is 1995.
Yeah, I believe now he looks like a drawing from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
That's, that actually the illustrator drew with his left hand. Yeah, Mel Brooks looks a little rough now, and I don't know what his I don't know what the state of his health is.
He's fine. He'll be fine.
Right. Yeah. He's a vampire, so...
Yeah.
He's not. He plays Professor Van Helsing in this movie.
No, I'm just saying, in real life, he's a vampire.
So what's the rundown for Dracula, Dead and Loving It?
Oh, boy. Well, it stars Mel Brooks, another Mel Brooks starring film that directed by Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Leslie Nielsen, Steven Weber from Wings, Amy Yasbeck from Wings.
Yeah.
This is Wings the movie.
So big Wings reunion,
Peter
Tony Shalhoub from Wings.
No, he's not in it, but Lol is. Yeah. I forget is the actor's name. Peter McNichol's in it,
who you might know, Paul McCartney in it?
Is Janosch from Ghostbusters 2, one of our favorite films.
Yeah.
Harvey Korman and Anne Bancroft. It's essentially a retelling of the Dracula story.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really need a plot synopsis. If you've seen any Dracula movie, you know what this movie's about.
Yeah, Leslie Nielsen plays Count Dracula, and there's not even a play on words here. He's just Count Dracula.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much pulling references from the original Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Right. It's mostly
Nosferatu.
Yeah, it's mostly the 1931 Todd Browning Dracula and... the Francis Ford Coppola Dracula. Those are the two big ones they pull from the most.
Yeah, it seemed like they were... You know how in Young Frankenstein they're telling the tale of Frankenstein and joking about it at the same time? It seemed like in this they were trying too much early on to tell the story of Dracula and not enough jokes.
Yeah.
So it's like...
I had an opposite... Like, I don't hate... this movie, I don't hate Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
I don't either.
It's not bad.
It's just fine.
But I think the reason this film is not... I think that when you have to compare this film to anything, you have to compare it to Young Frankenstein because it's the same sort of thing where it's a horror comedy from Mel Brooks. I think the reason this doesn't work like Young Frankenstein is Young Frankenstein... It's never a winking sort of movie. Like, it's a comedy, but they're never acting like it's a comedy. Everyone plays that movie straight.
Yeah.
Whereas this movie, everyone's like, wink, wink, we're in a comedy every fucking scene. And I think that's just the reason this doesn't work as well. And I think if they had played this straight, it would have been hilarious. Even with Leslie, because I love Leslie Nielsen.
I love Leslie Nielsen.
And I think if he had played the character just a little bit straighter than he does, it actually would have been... 10 times as funny.
I would have really enjoyed... What I think would have made this better is, yes, everybody plays it straight.
Right.
Don't acknowledge that they're in a comedy.
Yeah.
And if Dracula was dumb...
Right.
I think Dracula needs to be Frank Drebin from The Naked Gun.
Yes.
In a cape.
That would be hilarious.
But instead, Dracula... He's just Dracula. He's evil.
Yeah.
And he's winking at the camera.
Yeah, Dracula's not even that funny.
At all.
He's not a presence at all, I would say.
No, this is This is my least favorite Leslie Nielsen performance ever.
Yeah, it just seems like Mel Brooks gave all the quote-unquote good lines to himself. He was just like, I'll do all the comedy. And
I really feel like Peter McNichol is the only... like funny part of the movie.
Peter McNichol is fantastic in this.
He's doing a dead-on impression of an actor named Dwight Fry who played Renfield in the 1931 Dracula, and it's uncanny how accurate he's portraying that actor.
Wow, I'm glad we have you here to say that because Jeff and I never would.
Well, I am the guy who's hopped up on goofballs, that old-timey drug.
I also haven't seen that film since I was 10, so my references are a little rusty on that.
That laugh he does, that like hyena laugh, that's exactly how Dwight Fry does the laugh in Dracula when he plays Renfield. So it's a great... just channeling of that actor.
Yeah, I was never laughing at a scene unless he was in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I realized after the movie.
Yeah, he's the funniest part of the film.
Well, here's I have my funniest line queued up right here. So everyone ready? Here we go.
Master! Master!
Renfield, look at me. I'm drinking wine and eating chicken.
I love that line just because of the way Leslie Nielsen says chicken.
Yes, he's having... He's having a dream sequence where he's out in the sun and he takes chicken and wine off of this picnicking couple's blanket.
I don't know. It's not even a funny joke. Just he's like, "Can I have some of your chicken?" Like, why does he say chicken like that? It's hilarious. Anyway.
I mean, there are funny. Unlike
History of the World
Part 1, there are many times in this film where I laughed out loud.
There's a lot of good sight gags in this film.
Yeah, when he gets that paper cut and it's just squirting
blood everywhere. And then Leslie Nielsen's like, that was funny. And then my favorite sight gag in the film is there's a scene where Steven Weber as Jonathan Harker goes to stake Lucy after she's become a vampire. And he's about to stake her, and then Professor Van Helsing, played by Mel Brooks, says, like, wait! And he goes, he hides behind a column.
Yes.
And Jonathan Harker hits the stake, and just geysers of blood fly up.
Yes. Not once.
Van Helsing says, oh, she's still alive, hit her again. So he does again, and even more blood comes out. And it's ridiculous, and it's that I thought was very funny.
The funny parts are sight gags. Right. Most of these jokes, they're hit or miss. They're just no knockout jokes, and really.
Because the other sight gag is the scene where Peter McNichol's eating the bugs, and
that was good too.
Harvey Korman as Dr. Seward, just when he remarks that there's an insect leg sticking out of Peter McNichol's mouth, and Peter McNichol is denying that he's eating this bug, and Harvey Korman says, "It's fighting for its life."
Yeah.
I was almost in tears, and that's more than I can say about History of the World Part 1.
Yeah.
When the second bug eats, when the spider comes in, because at first it's like he gets away with eating the first one. He's like, oh, it was a raisin, and then the spider comes down and he eats it.
Yeah.
Harry Korman is
Harvey.
Harvey Korman. He's like, I just saw you put that spider in your mouth.
No, you didn't. It's just a funny
scene.
It's
like the delivery is why it's funny.
Yeah.
And one of the few instances where I laughed at Leslie Nielsen is when he's in Lucy's room and he has to hide on the ceiling, and Dr. Seward slams the door shut and he just falls straight on his face. And I mean, that's no credit to Leslie Nielsen.
Because that was probably a stuntman at that point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It wasn't an old man in a Dracula wig. Another sight gag.
I love that, too. Where Dracula, he has the now infamous Gary Oldman bun hair.
And in one,
it's a hat.
In the movie, he's got it on backwards.
Yeah. And that stuff like that. And again, that's all sight gag. So it's like, I don't know. That's weird because Young Frankenstein, I don't think there are any real sight gags in that movie.
Young Frankenstein is all sharp writing.
It's all time. And I get, and like the biggest difference you would have is, even though both films are Mel Brooks, Young Frankenstein has Gene Wilder writing it. And Gene Wilder is a genius. Yeah. Whereas Young Frankenstein has Rudy DeLuca and Steve Haberman writing it.
Dracula Dead and Loving.
Yeah.
Okay.
What did I say, Young Frankenstein? Dracula Dead and Loving it has these two guys. I don't know who the fuck they are. So.
Yeah. Like I said, I can't think of one joke that isn't funny because of the delivery or the sight gag revolving around it. None of this writing is very good.
When we were talking about Young Frankenstein, we were talking about how well directed that was. And this is like point and shoot. The whole movie, it looks like a TV movie. And that really bugged me because
we even said History of the World Part 1 was directed well. There's like a lot of interesting things going on.
It's a visually appealing film. Whereas this is literally just Mel Brooks sets his camera up and people just stand in front of it.
Clearly just backdrops on a studio lot.
I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe he didn't have the budget to do it. I don't know. It just seemed.
I don't think this had a big budget at all.
Like everything Young Frankenstein did right production wise was done wrong in this. Like this is in color.
This would have benefited from black and white.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Without a doubt. And
he should have actually just tried to make this like a spiritual sequel to Young Frankenstein, basically.
It is, but it was gone about the wrong way entirely. Young Frankenstein looks beautiful because of the black and white. Even though those are painted sets, it's okay because it's black and white and it's paying tribute.
Yeah, it fits the style.
Cheap.
And I feel like some of these Victorian sets would have looked better in black and white because they do, like you said, look cheap in color because you can see all the flaws.
It looks horrible.
And then they didn't use matte paintings enough because they use them in like a one scene early on and it looks cool when Peter McNichol's walking out into Transylvania.
Right. Yeah. That look and it, like there's like an arch and it's like a sunset. That looked nice.
That was the only one though, that looked good. The rest of them are very bad looking.
Well, everything else is indoors. They're all inside sequences. There's no more.
Well, they keep shooting to that picture of like
the castle. Or
it's not even like a castle.
Carfax
like,
Abbey, you mean?
Yeah.
Carfax.com Abbey.
Give me the Carfax.
I'd like to see the title on this vehicle. Dracula Dead and Loving It, it's not horrible. I mean, it's got an 11% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it is nowhere near that bad.
Not
that
bad.
That's absurd.
Because what does History of the World have on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, I don't even
know. I don't want to...
It's much hot, probably 60-something.
If my laptop didn't just die, I would check myself.
People like History of the World, but this is a better movie. It's certainly not an 11%.
No, not at all. Because that's what, like a 1 out of 10? Yeah.
Yeah,
no.
It's not good. Not a good rating.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of people, like I was looking through the IMDb forums, and a lot of people like this movie, like fans. Fans like this movie. So I'm not sure why critics are so down on it. Leslie Nielsen kind of took a hit in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of stopped liking his shtick because he was doing the same thing for about 15 years.
Yeah.
Well, even maybe 20 years, starting with Airplane.
That might be what it is that people were just sick of him by this point.
Yeah. Which is a shame, because, like...
He was great. Leslie Nielsen was fantastic.
Yeah, like, he basically did the same thing, but it was always fun when he was doing
not
it.
Not in this, though.
No.
So I don't blame them for not liking this.
He's a non-entity in this film. As is Mel Brooks, really.
I mean, Mel Brooks is... I think he gets a little more to work with, but, I mean...
He just feels shoehorned in there. Just put somebody else in that role, like...
Yeah, part of Young Frankenstein, like we talked about a few weeks ago, is Gene Wilder said, the caveat is I don't want you in this movie.
Right.
Just direct it. I want
and
you directing.
He probably would have wanted to be Igor, which would have ruined the fucking movie.
Right,
you know what I mean?
We would have had Mel Brooks as Igor instead of the amazing Marty Feldman.
Yeah, and I like Mel Brooks as an actor. I don't think he's terrible. It's just, I don't know. I just don't. He's always clearly acting. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
He's always on. He's always like he acts like someone doing stand up, and he doesn't act like an actor.
He's it's just that Borscht Belt attitude where everything's shticky and there's always a punchline coming, so you're just waiting for it. And it's like, oh, this is tiresome.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't stand the test of time.
There's one scene where Dracula and Van Helsing, they keep trading insults, and they're doing it in. I guess it's supposed to be Romanian.
I think it's Yiddish.
I think it's Yiddish, but it's supposed to be Dracula's language. But holy shit, it just keeps going. And I was like, this sucks. But I will say, I came around to it because there's one quick shot where after you think it's over, Dracula walks by an open window and says one last, like...
Yeah, because they're each trying to get the last word.
But up until that last bit where Dracula walks by the window, I was like, why is this happening?
This is not working.
It kept going and going.
But then the film ends on a line from Mel Brooks.
Yeah, they do a callback to that joke. And it's like, just, really?
It's too self-serving.
You can tell like he thought that was the best joke, and it's really
that,
not.
That's the problem here. That if that's your instinct to end the entire film on a running gag that didn't work in the first place, there's problems there.
Right.
And they're inherent in pre-production.
I think, like you said, if they had made Dracula stupider or if they had made him... Because Dracula in this film, he's in between. He's stupid, but he's also serious. They should have picked one or the other.
Yeah, the tone.
If he was like super Dracula.
Like, yeah, if he had been super evil and then everyone else is just this bumbling idiot, that actually would have been hilarious.
And he's flustered at the ineptitude of all this.
Yeah.
Yeah, another
like,
great
angle. He can't believe he's dealing with everyone being stupid. That actually would have been funny. But
yeah, they could have gone full throttle in either direction.
Yeah,
instead, they cruised in at 30 miles an hour the entire film.
Yeah. They needed one or the other. They just found an in-between, so...
Yeah, I mean...
It's kind of a letdown. I wish this weren't Mel Brooks' last movie. I wish he had... I don't know. So, what do you guys think? I think, like, a trend we've found with the director series is the later in a career a director gets, the worse the film gets. Like, it's very few directors that stay good. Like, Martin Scorsese stays good.
He's one of the few I can think of.
And I'm wondering
what
you
about
got
in the director series. Were there any that stayed good throughout? What was Polanski's third movie that we did?
I can't even fucking remember.
Yeah. Now we're all embarrassed because we can't remember. We did Macbeth.
I guess it was Rosemary's Baby, but that was early in his career.
Oh, yeah. So Macbeth would have been the latest one, and that we all liked that.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm...
And Polanski won an Oscar
for the Pianist.
The Pianist, which was later.
So I guess he's not terrible. I don't know, but my question is, why do you think that is? Because I think in any other field, as they say, practice makes perfect. So wouldn't it make sense that the more movies you make, the better you would get at making movies? Why do you think?
I think I'm going to say with comedies in particular, trends change drastically. Right. Even not even decade to decade, 5 year blocks to 5 year blocks.
Right.
Trends in comedy change, and that's really hard to maintain your relevancy as a comedic director when the trends are changing so drastically.
Yeah,
I mean, right now we're probably at the tail end of the Seth Rogen rapid fire dialogue type.
Let's hope.
Let's hope we are, but. And I don't know what's coming next, but in, I want to say 20 years, we're going to look back at things like Knocked Up and Neighbors that came out this year, and we're going to say,
why is this?
Well, this doesn't
happening?
Really hold up at all.
Yeah. It's weird. But
so I think,
but I think that also applies to like directing styles and technology, and I think that all goes into it, is that technology's changing and
so
the audience expectations are changing. And
so basically what your guys are saying is just, people don't know how to adapt, basically. Is that what you think it is?
I do.
Why do you think then that Scorsese is so good at it?
I don't think that's it. I think it's maybe that the directors don't, like, people, they don't know how to subvert expectations almost. Like, people start expecting something from them.
Yeah.
And if they don't deliver that, then it's.
They get, like, pigeonholed, basically. Yeah. Like, they have to make a certain type of film.
Or they just have, like, De Palma has to make another blowout after blowout. Yeah, and he can't, you know what I mean? Because you can only have one miss. Marty Scorsese is good at it because he keeps pushing, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, Wolf of Wall Street, there is no other movie like Wolf of Wall Street that I can think of.
Yeah.
Like, it spans so many years, and it's just so fast.
Yeah.
That's a movie that, like, when I saw Wolf of Wall Street, I was shocked that's a Scorsese movie, because that feels like a movie directed by like a young director.
Yeah.
And he's like 70-something now, and it's just, I don't know, I guess my question really is, why is Martin Scorsese such a good director? Well, I can't...
I mean, Tarantino maintains
that's
his relevancy.
True.
But I mean, but he's made a limited amount of movies.
Yeah, but he's made plenty of movies at this point, but he's so derivative in his style, and what he does is he takes best aspects of all these different areas of pop culture throughout the decades, so he kind of walks a different path, you know? He doesn't fall victim to the whole pigeonholing, because...
Yeah. Yeah, he proves that theory wrong, because he does do the same thing over and over, essentially.
But
it
feels fresh.
His style's the same because he picks the best aspects of different genres, but he does different genres
He knows how to cast a fucking part. Yeah. Like the cast always works in his movies.
Yeah.
And people like Christoph Waltz, like, we would never know about him if it wasn't for Tarantino.
Yeah.
And that's like, I can't imagine anyone else playing that role of...
I feel like he and Scorsese have their ear to the ground when it comes to who's up and coming, what ideas people actually want to see on screen. Either that, or they have some really talented people working for them.
Yeah, it's a mystery, I guess. I don't know. So
music also plays a role in it, too.
Yeah.
Those are two directors who know how to pick a soundtrack, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't mean to like derail the conversation.
No,
it's an interesting point.
It's just like, I was just thinking about that. I was thinking about like how every director we've done in a director series, they start out so good, and then the later in their careers, it just, something goes wrong. I don't have an answer. I was just wondering.
The only other people I can think of are like the Coen brothers and Paul Thomas Anderson, who...
Yeah, the Coen brothers are definitely people who have only gotten better and better. I mean...
Yeah. But they do different movies every time. That's what I'm saying. Paul Thomas Anderson and the Coen brothers follow that same pattern where they are constantly changing the kind of movies they do.
Right.
So
it's true, because like, people are always like, oh, I wish Scorsese would make another mob movie. And it's like, he doesn't have to, because he makes different movies.
He's made two of the best.
Yeah. Like, what else do you want from him? Yeah.
I mean, on a closing note for that, I don't know if it's the musician sophomore slump theory where they spend 10 years writing that first album and then 18 months writing the second one, and that's why it's not as
true.
Good.
Yeah, it's true. You're always trying to, you know, recapture that magic, I guess.
Yeah, or you fight so hard for it, and then once you achieve it, it's like you don't have the drive, the spark to keep doing what you need to do.
Because, yeah, I'm sure the more established and popular of a filmmaker you get, the more yes men you surround yourself with. You're just like, yeah, we can do that. And
yeah,
it's
that
like,
terrible idea is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's do it.
And this,
like, look at like George Lucas, who was on top of the world, and it's like, I can do anything. And when you watch like makings of the prequel films, it's all yes men who are just like, this is a great idea, and you can tell from the looks on their faces like they don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah. And that's a good, like, Lucas and Mel Brooks are in the same situation here, where it seems like Mel Brooks wanted that glory again, so he tried to remake the movie that people love the most, which is Young Frankenstein, without putting any of the spark into it.
There's just none of the magic.
Yeah.
But it's, again, I still want to say, I don't think this is as dull dreadful a film as History of the World Part 1.
Yeah, this is it's a good effort.
Yeah, you
get an A
worse.
For effort.
A C minus.
D for Dracula, right, guys? B for blood. Any more?
C for cape.
I like it. B for break. That's your cue.
I for I don't want to do this joke anymore.
A for Acula.
Ah, come forth and let me tell you the tale of cutprintfilm.com, a film review, editorial, and news website.
Have they got any loot there?
They do. Oh, I can't find it. Does anyone know where the loot is?
I have one right here.
Cutprint Film has a merry band of men.
Do they drop the beat?
Yes, they do! It includes More Like Radio, Joystick Jerks, and Anti-Fanboy.
Lemons.
I met you at the blood bank, and I was down on the
stairs. I met Rabbit, and give it for me. Oh, wait, it's that Saul puppet.
Yeah. If you're, by the way, the holidays are coming, and if you're looking for the perfect gift for the film lover in your life,
fleshlights.
Yes. Why not go to cutprintfilm.com and look for our holiday gift guide?
There's a lot of good film-related gifts.
Right, and a lot of unfilm-related gifts too. Like
plenty
a,
of those.
Like a sweater.
Yeah.
Three sweaters.
Yeah.
And a gift certificate for a back rub.
Yeah.
By me.
And a recipe for Red Lobster Cheddar Bay biscuits.
I could just eat three of those. Delicious. I don't want to get too crazy, though. Just three.
Well, you know what we got plenty of for Christmas to give away?
What?
Disappointment.
Oh,
that's true.
I thought you were going to say venereal diseases.
Well, that would be disappointing. So, yeah, these are our top three. Well, actually, top nine, really.
Yeah.
Because we're each doing three.
Yeah, we're silly like that.
Our top disappointments for 2014.
Right, and to clarify, this is not best of, worst of. These are not films we think particularly are terrible. These are just films that we expected more from them, and we didn't get what we wanted because we're spoiled babies.
Yeah. So who wants to go first?
I'll go. I'll go, everyone.
Good.
I'll go.
Good for you.
So this will come as a shock. Not really a shock, as I said it already, but my my probably biggest disappointment of the year would definitely be Foxcatcher, which I really, really wanted to love this movie, and I really did not. Again, I don't think it's bad. It's got some great acting in it, but it's just, I don't know, there's something missing from it, you know?
That's what I'm reading a lot of people saying, like, yeah, I like the movie. Yeah, these performances are fantastic, but there is something missing.
Well, I'm glad
I disagree with those people, but that's what they're saying.
Well, I'm glad I'm not a freak then and not the only one, because, I don't know, I wanted to love it, couldn't love it.
I can't understand that. Point of view.
I'm not of that opinion. I loved the film, but I like cold, sterile movies. Yeah. So.
I mean, I like cold, sterile doctor implements. That's about
it.
Not
who
films.
Doesn't, though? Who doesn't?
I can see why, though, because I didn't expect much from Foxcatcher. I didn't even watch the trailer before going in.
So, yeah, the trailers were intense, and the movie's intense, too. I don't know, just the trailers sold it as something, I don't know, more emotional, maybe? I don't know.
They did. They definitely did.
Yeah, so...
but I think
and again,
it worked.
It's not a bad movie at all. In fact, it's a very good movie. It's just not what I wanted. So,
right. So that's your worst of the year?
No, this would be number three. This would be number three.
Worst of the year, Foxcatcher. It's a terrible film. Just so pure dreck.
My third disappointment, not number one disappointment.
All right.
Moving on. You want me to go? Everybody looked at me.
Yeah, you
so
go.
I'll go.
Well, we're just disappointed in you.
Yes. My third.
You spilled paint in the garage.
Here's a movie that was highly disappointing. And I didn't expect much from it, but there was some. I expected it to at least look good. Transcendence, starring Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that came out this year.
Yeah.
I expected nothing of this film other than pure drivel.
I kind of was like, oh, I'll go see that because it was the director directed the debut of Wally
Pfister.
Pfister.
Wow. Yeah.
And he's Christopher Nolan's DP, and he makes great looking films. So I was like, oh, this might be good.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Right. I was like, man, it's going to look like a Christopher Nolan movie. It's right. But it must all be in the direction because this movie sucked. It was utter dog shit.
Was it boring?
It is boring. It is like preachy.
It looks boring. It looks dreadfully boring.
A horror movie at points, but then not. Oh,
so it's got that sunshine effect to it?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Definitely.
Where it's a sci-fi movie until it's not anymore.
And then I guess being around Christopher Nolan made Wally Pfister feel like he had to try and emulate that real
He even has it has a Nolan cast. I mean, Cillian Murphy is in it and Morgan Freeman's in it.
And they all suck in it. Yeah. He tries to do that thing where you know how Nolan kind of wraps everything up, mm-hmm.
Like a montage sort of at
yeah,
the end, but it's powerful.
Exactly, yeah.
No,
he tries it and it fails miserably. It's just bad.
How's Johnny Depp with wires coming out of his head?
He's
so... See, last time I saw Johnny Depp, he had a bird on his head. This movie had wires in it on his head.
I honestly think it's time for everyone to hang up their... Johnny Depp's great.
Hang up your Johnny Depp mask.
Yeah, because I just saw Johnny Depp in Into the Woods screening, and he is atrocious. He's the worst part of the movie, so...
He's done.
Yeah.
So Rebecca Hall is very good in the early scenes of...
I love her. I think she's great.
Of Transcendence, but then, like everything in the film, she falls off towards the end. Ugh. But in the scenes where Johnny Depp's character's dying, she's has a real emotional connection to him and truly doesn't want him to die, which is what fuels this whole thing.
Right. And that fuel burns out, apparently.
Yeah, they put his brain into a computer.
Good stuff.
This sounds atrocious. Yes. I'll never watch this.
Oh, I will absolutely never watch. There's no reason to. All right. My number three biggest disappointment of 2014,
Dave,
is David Kostel.
We can all agree on that one.
Is Maleficent.
Oh.
Yeah.
So many movies came out this year. I forgot that came out, too.
Yeah. This Maleficent came out back in March. Maybe April?
Who knows?
I forget.
There was some way to look this up.
I'm not doing that. Not for Maleficent. Yeah, it was a retelling of the Sleeping Beauty tale starring Angelina Jolie, and it was just just sat there. It didn't marvel. I thought it was going to be beautiful. I thought it was going to be fun, a different
right.
Because
it's
a different take on the whole thing.
It's great casting. Her as Maleficent is good casting. Because she looks
very
like
casting.
She'd be perfect for that.
I'm not the world's biggest Angelina Jolie fan, but is perfect right. casting. And she's not even terrible. She just doesn't have a whole lot to do. And when you are playing a villain who is the main character of a movie and you don't have anything to do, that is insane. That's bad.
The title character, which is insane.
I didn't...
But it's an interesting character who has somehow nothing to do. And
they give everything to Shortolo Copley, right? Oh,
and that's the other thing.
Man, he's my favorite actor. No,
that takes this movie from flatline to dipping below death. he is horrendous in this. And I talked about this months ago on the show, but he's just a piece of shit in this movie. He sucks a dog's dick. He's terrible.
I still haven't seen it.
I haven't seen either, and I never will, but from reading the reviews and stuff, the thing that really disappointed me is that they make her sympathetic, and I hate that. Why couldn't...
Yeah,
why,
exactly.
In the original Sleeping Beauty, she's an unrepenting, evil character.
She's evil embodied.
And the fact that they're just they made it basically... It's like I Spit on Your Grave, where it's like a rape revenge movie. And
yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I don't know why you would do that with that character.
They tried to do the Wicked thing, right? With
uh-huh.
those, where it turns
yeah,
out
and
that
she's... That is compelling, the Wicked version, because
That's also got humor, and that's a totally different tone.
Yeah.
This is trying to make this villain a Disney princess. It doesn't work.
Yeah. No thanks.
So, That's my number three, Maleficent. See,
that is disappointing because Disney had an opportunity to like start something there. Like,
well, they did. Next to Cinderella coming out in 2015, and that's going to stink too. Yeah.
But is it like who's
that's a straight up remake?
Yeah, that's a straight retelling.
No, I'm saying
action.
Like they had a chance to like start telling the stories of these villains from their.
Yeah, I would love live action villains movies where they stayed villains. Yes. I don't want to see them as heroes.
And that's what I thought I was getting with Maleficent.
Yeah, the reason I love Disney villains is because they're villains. Mm-hmm. Like that's what makes them interesting.
Yeah, they're pure evil. Yeah. They have like no other.
You're
going to
tell me a Gaston movie wouldn't be fantastic?
Oh God, that would be awesome.
But no, if they made it now, it would just be like, oh, he's really misunderstood.
His
like,
dad didn't love him.
Yeah, like
it would just be fucking Chris Hemsworth. Yeah. Flexing through the forest.
He would still have that hammer from Thor for some reason. We don't know the reason.
All right. Okay, so my this next one, so again, this is a good movie, but man, am I disappointed with The Babadook.
Wow.
Which is blowing up Twitter this weekend. Everyone's talking about
my favorite movies.
Man. So yeah. So Jeff saw this very early, long before I believe he saw it in 2011 and then it came out this year. So I was itching to see this because I love horror movies, and Jeff said it's a great horror movie, and a lot of critics were saying it's a classic. It's like a modern classic.
Mm-hmm.
I watched this on Halloween. I was like, this is the perfect night to watch The Babadook on Halloween. And again, The Babadook, it's incredibly well directed. Jennifer Kent, I think this is her first movie. She's a great director. Essie Davis, the actress, is fantastic.
She is so good.
Like, I would love if she got an Oscar nomination for this. She's that good in this movie, and it's creepy, and the design of the Babadook is creepy.
Gorgeous.
But, and here this is go. A big but, the entire film centers around Essie Davis's son, and he is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, he is.
Again, that's the point of the character. The movie's basically about just this woman. She's traumatized, and she has a shithead son.
Yeah.
And it's basically about how she's basically going crazy because she lives with this crazy son. And and I don't think it's a case of a bad child actor because the kid's doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing. But he is so...
It's a little over the top, this performance.
He's so grating... that it hurts the movie for me because I want to love it. I wanted to love this movie, and I'm tempted to just rewatch it, and every time he talks, hit mute, and I would probably like it a lot more.
The fact that is the point of the character, though, is why it doesn't bother me like that.
See, I don't know.
I like that he's so obnoxious that you empathize with this woman over how she deals with this shithead child.
I think the problem with that, though, is... there's a reversal near the end of the movie where you're supposed to suddenly identify with the boy, and I can't do that.
You're right. Because
he's a fucking nightmare.
That doesn't work.
I think there's about approximately 30,000 scenes in this film where...
he's kicking the back of the car seat.
Where the mother is driving him somewhere, the kid's in the back seat, kicking her seat and going, "Mommy!" And he just keeps saying it over and over and... I was watching this with my wife, and I turned to my wife, and I was just like, I kind of want to turn this off. Like, I wasn't enjoying it. And I suck it out, and I made it to the end, and I did like the movie. It's a great horror movie, especially in this day and age when we get terrible tween horror movies. Yeah. But I just feel like if the kid had been dialed down a notch, I would have loved this movie.
I do not disagree with that.
Okay.
But
so that's why it's on my disappointment list, because everyone seems to love this movie, and rightfully so. It's really well made, but that kid, he sort of ruins it for me.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it.
You should see it because you'll.
Babadook.
It's good.
Yeah, and Dave is someone.
Look.
Okay.
Dave is someone who gets very scared by things, so this will probably put you in a coma.
I showed up in a gorilla outfit, and he was petrified. He thought I was here to steal his coconuts.
I thought it was a real gorilla.
So, yeah, number two for me is The Babadook.
Dave?
Number two for me. Okay, so I thought this was going to be the best year in movie history ever because we have a Wes Anderson movie, a David Fincher movie, a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, and a Darren Aronofsky movie all in the same year. So, boy, was I disappointed when I saw Noah.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Number two on my list.
Well, let me just tick off number two on my list because I also have Noah on my disappointed list.
Let me just say I'm the one member of Cupper Film who actually thinks Noah is one of the best movies of the year.
Noah, thanks.
Noah, I believe you said don't go in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, in our second episode.
So I agree.
How you guys look at me regarding Foxcatcher, this is how I look at you regarding this movie, because I don't get why you don't like it that much.
It goes on forever. Nothing happens.
So much happens. He builds an ark and all this stuff happens.
It's just like cheesy.
It is cheesy.
Like they put them all to sleep with magic dust. Okay.
It takes shortcuts like that. The magic dust.
Well, yeah, I'll agree that the magic smoke that puts all the animals to sleep is cheap.
The first act, I think, is wonderful. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
The second act is not as good. The third act, when they're on the sea for approximately 17 hours, I just can't get through it. No. I don't like it at all. I don't like the tension built up between. There's a villain on the ark.
Yeah.
For some reason.
I don't know. See, the reason I like it is I think it's a gutsy.
Ambitious, definitely.
It could have easily been like a cheap religious movie, and it's not. It's a very mystical movie.
Like, no, I like that.
There's
about
no like religion actually in the film. It's all like magic and stuff like that.
And I think that's brave, and I think that's ambitious, and I think all those things are great.
And I love that Noah is just portrayed as a lunatic, and I thought that was great. Like that takes guts to make a movie about a revered religious character and make him this lunatic. Like, that's so...
Yeah.
I don't know.
On paper, it sounded like an amazing idea, but on the screen, it's just
like... It's not a bad movie, but it's another one for me that kind of just sat there, and I was like, huh, I was really expecting more out of this.
I'm definitely going to rewatch that before the year is over, because I'm thinking about writing something about it. But
I will say, I probably will rewatch Noah.
Maybe when I rewatch it, I will... be like, ugh, but I don't know, maybe it was because Jeff saw it before all of us, and he sort of said, you know, not that great, and I think, Dave, you saw it too before I did, and you also said you hated it more than Jeff. Yeah. So I saw it last, and I went into it thinking, this is going to suck, and I was like, I really like this, I don't know what the hell's going on, so.
And I'm not a huge fan, like, I don't like the second Lord of the Rings movie, and it kind of starts to feel like that at a certain point, where they're fighting off all the people from getting on the ark.
Rock monsters that are like ints.
It got too... too CG fest for me at one point.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know, there's so much things in the film that are so cool that I can't just, like, there's that sequence where Noah has like a dream where he's under the water with all the animals, and that's a gorgeous shot. And
there's plenty of gorgeous shots in this, whether they're practical or not. Yeah. There's a lot of gorgeous shots.
The only thing that slightly redeemed the movie for me was the point that you brought up, that it could be taking place in the future. And
thing I love too, that it's hinted that this isn't actually thousands of years ago, it's thousands of years in the future and stuff like that. I don't know.
I will rewatch this. This is definitely not a bad movie.
It's not
at all.
I don't think it's a perfect movie. It does have problems. Like, all of Noah's kids are boring. I don't care about any of them.
Yeah.
How about the scene where Russell Crowe gets mad and he sets the little raft on fire?
I love that. He throws up like a firebomb.
Yeah. He brought fireworks with him, his Roman candle.
See, he's a dick. I like that. I like that Noah's a dick.
All right. So I guess we're back to number one then.
Yeah.
Let's do our number one round.
All right. So I ended up liking this movie more than you guys again, but I gave it a 7, but I kind of wish I could drop it down to a 6. And this movie, I was pumped for this movie. Not all year, but I was pumped for it for the first half of the year. The trailers were fantastic. And that film is Godzilla.
Ah.
So
I was going to put this on my list, but I didn't.
What is that?
That's Godzilla.
That's the sound of Bryan Cranston dying and my interest in the film waning immediately.
So Godzilla. Oh, man. I don't know what the hell happened with this movie. So... I don't think Godzilla is terrible. I don't think it's good either. It's somewhere in the middle. The problem with Godzilla is it's not that they don't focus on Godzilla a lot.
No, there's plenty of Godzilla.
Because I don't care. And like Jaws doesn't focus on Jaws a lot. And that's sort of the model they were going for with this. The problem is the human characters in this are the worst. Whereas in Jaws, the human characters are so compelling. The human characters in this, especially played the lead one, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, who is awful.
Yes, he's a manila folder with shoes on.
John Courtney would have been good in that role.
No, he wouldn't. I think a plate of uncooked spaghetti would have been better in this role than...
Why is it on a plate?
I don't know. That makes you think.
Should be in a pot of boiling water.
But Aaron Taylor Johnson, he's a bad actor, and his character is just uninteresting. Yeah. He's just there. And I don't know. The trailers for this movie made it look like it was going to be like this intense, scary, awesome movie, and it wasn't. And
well, at least we got none of that though.
And I did what redeemed it for me was the last like half hour of the film is just straight up Godzilla fighting monsters, and that was really well done.
And it looked great.
Yeah, the effects are phenomenal in this. Like Godzilla never once looks like a CGI creature. He looks like a real giant
T-Rex.
Yeah,
he doesn't look like a T-Rex.
The most upsetting thing about Godzilla is while you're watching it, you can see a better movie in there. In all the things but the story, there's a better movie.
Yeah. I think that's a movie. The problem besides the Aaron Taylor Johnson is the screenplay. I don't think what the fuck's his name, the director?
Gareth Edwards.
I don't think he was the problem. I think when he's on in that movie, he's firing on all cylinders. I think that's an issue of the script is just lazy. Yeah,
he did a great job of shooting everything from the ground and keeping the
tone. Like every time you see Godzilla, it's always from the ground up. It's pointing. It's great. And there's no like Michael Bay shots where the camera's like
spinning.
Yeah,
like Zack Snyder flying cameras.
Yeah, it's like a grounded way of shooting it, and that's great. It's just the script is weak. Yeah. Bryan Cranston's character, who's the most interesting human, dies like 10 minutes.
The trailers tell us is the star of the film.
Yeah, if the whole movie had been about Bryan Cranston's character trying to redeem himself and prove that Godzilla's real and all that stuff, it would have been great. But no, we get his plank of wood son.
It's the Scarecrow from Wizard of Oz.
So Godzilla is my number one disappointing film of the year.
What do you got, Dave?
Well, my number one disappointment is a movie that it was so disappointing because I still to this day have not talked to another person who didn't like it as much as I didn't like it.
Oh.
Snowpiercer.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
You didn't like it? Ah.
It did almost nothing for me. It was built up so much, and the movie I was expecting was totally different from what I got.
Were you expecting hard sci-fi?
I was expecting like hard sci-fi.
Were you expecting Mike's Hard Lemonade?
I was expecting something...
Crack too open for me, would you?
I was expecting something very dark, but not in this...
It's goofy.
Like, yeah, it's goofy dark.
The tone is... It's dark, but it's...
It's Edgar Wright dark.
Yeah,
that's how it feels.
Yeah. I do feel like it got inflated. Like, a lot of people were...
Oh, it's not in the top five of my list at all.
It'd probably be way down, like number 18, probably on mine.
Yeah. But I'd say it's in my top 20.
I definitely really liked it, but I don't think, I don't know. I could see someone being disappointed by it, though, definitely. There's a lot of clunky stuff in it, like
the end.
End is, it's just.
Mind if I dump this exposition on you?
Holy shit. It's like the end of Matrix. What is it, the second one where Keanu Reeves meets and he just explains everything. And just like, can this movie end?
And that's what I feel like. There wasn't enough to make a movie. It's a collection of scenes and then exposition at the end. It's just fucking what's his name, Ed Harris, talking forever.
Yeah.
And then the train crashes and there's a polar bear, and I'm like, what is happening? I wanted a twist really badly because they're gearing you up for a twist.
Well,
the
twist
comes.
Is that, you know, there might be life out there. That's sort of the twist, which isn't really a twist. It's just a resolution.
Yeah.
It's nothing like the Transylvania twist.
Yeah.
But the early...
Is that anything like the Graveyard Smash?
That's exactly.
Early scenes I liked, and then the masked fight scene is good.
I love the look of it. I love the grungy look. I love the design. That mass fight scene where the lights keep going out is great. That's so well filmed.
Like you said, it was a decent movie, like Foxcatcher.
Right.
No, this wasn't as good as Foxcatcher, but like this was a decent movie to me, but it just was hyped up to be.
Yeah.
There was a lot of hype.
Absolutely.
Around
So,
number one.
All right. My number one biggest disappointment of 2014 is Boyhood.
Wow. Yeah. I give you 100 points for saying that. Yeah. You're a brave man. Because I, too, was disappointed in Boyhood, but not number one.
Yeah, the problem with this, Boyhood's not a bad film. It's not even a mediocre film.
No,
it's a good film.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for something that was filmed over 12 years and such an achievement in filmmaking, the fact that Richard Linklater couldn't get better actors to play the supporting parts drives me crazy. It's an unforgivable sin. don't tell me you didn't know these people weren't good, because they're not good from the get-go. And I'm talking of the step-parents. Yeah. I'm talking about the magical landscaper. I'm talking about the friends of the boy.
Ugh.
There's an explanation for that. Do you want to know what it is?
I'd love to know.
So because,
just whisper it to me. Don't tell Chris.
Because they were coming back every year, they needed local Austin actors that would be available year after year.
Couldn't they have found better ones?
That makes sense.
I guess they could have.
It's weird that they got two A-listers to come back every year.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're
his friends, I guess.
Yeah, and they're the ones they gave the money to.
Yeah, still, I don't know. If you're doing something this ambitious, if you were doing a painting and you were coming back to the same spot every year and setting up an easel and painting, you wouldn't you would not go in the third year and say, "Ah, fuck it. I'll just use dirt this year to paint with." Like, why? It just drives me crazy. All the attention to detail, and I don't think Linklater is a hack or anything like that.
No,
I think he's a really good filmmaker.
Not at
I think
all,
he cares about his films, but it just seems really, really, really bad decision making.
I'll one up this, and I too was disappointed in Boyhood, and not just because of the acting, it's the story. I feel like this is such an ambitious, and it is an achievement, no matter how you look at it. And the fact that there's no movie that's ever been made like this, and the fact that this is the result, I was sort of like, oh, is this it? Is this what we're getting? The story of nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about the boy. I don't care about the titular boy of Boyhood at all.
I cared, but
I didn't at all. His sister was great, played by Richard Linklater's daughter. I cared more about her. I wish the movie had been about her character. I cared about Ethan Hawke's character. I cared about Patricia Arquette's character. Mm-hmm. But the boy, I don't fucking give a shit about anything he does. I don't care. At the end, we're just like, out of nowhere, it's just like, oh, he's a photographer now. I was like, fuck this movie. Yeah. I don't care. And again, it's a good movie, and there's no other movie like this movie. But
I'm more forgiving on the story aspect, just because the film as a whole is so ambitious that's kind of the point.
Right.
The 12 years. I'm more forgiving on the weak story.
I just feel like there's not a narrative, dude. He a lot of his movies.
I just feel like if you're gonna do an ambitious story like this, make it about just something more. And I don't know what that could be. I just feel like, I don't know.
Okay, so I've been hyped for this movie for about 4 years, because that's when I started reading about it. Mm-hmm. So I will also agree that this movie disappointed me in a way.
Oh, wow.
That it wasn't the film that I was expecting.
We're all the best.
I think I built it up too much.
Yeah, the hype.
I still loved it. Like,
I kind of feel like that was the problem. Like, I feel like if I had gone into this with no hype, I would have liked it a lot more.
Yeah, and I love those before movies, the Richard Linklater mm-hmm. before movies, and I was expecting something of the caliber of that, but over 12 years. So, like, I was expecting 12 little vignettes that fit like that, and this is something different. And because of that, I didn't like it as much. So,
but I mean, in a way, it's good that it's different, because he's not making the same type of. And
it's just,
but those are better.
I don't know. There's just the movie. It drags. It's too long. Did he really need two different abusive stepfathers?
Yeah,
really? Did we really need that?
I agree with you.
It's just, I don't know.
Some of the story elements don't work for me.
And again, let me clarify before, every critic association comes and murders me in my sleep or leaves a horse head like in Godfather. Boyhood is a good movie.
Yes, absolutely.
It's just,
absolutely.
It's not as great as everyone else says it is, for me at least. I don't think it's that great.
All right, so those are our disappointments. Yeah. All right, so moving on to our biggest surprises of 2014. Who would like to start this one?
Not me, because I went last time.
We all looked at you.
Oh,
please don't.
I'll go.
Okay, good. Good for you.
My number three.
So mean. Good for you, idiot.
My number three biggest surprise of 2014 mm-hmm. in the year of our Lord.
Yes. Go on, tell me more.
Yeah, we're waiting.
Was Jenny Slate's Obvious Child.
Oh, nice. Well, that's my number two. So, let's talk about that.
That's my number two.
We're all in love.
So let's do that. Let's dish, boys.
Yeah.
So this is the movie you kind of went to reluctantly, right, Jeff?
Yeah, because it was a romantic comedy, and, we saw it was coming out, so we figured, let's review this. Let's do this one.
Yeah.
And I know Jenny Slate from SNL, and I don't like SNL at all, so I didn't think very much of Jenny Slate. But I had seen the Marcel the Shell with Shoes On YouTube videos, and if you don't like those, then you have a heart made out of leather.
I actually haven't seen those.
Oh, they're just adorable. Listen, if you're having any type of existential crisis,
Every day, Jeff,
watch these. They're so cute, and she's just like so profound as this little shell with shoes glued onto her, and a single googly eye stuck to her.
I'll have to watch it.
Jenny Slate is nonstop fucking funny in this movie. It's like,
and not only is she funny, she's really good at the dramatic stuff too. Like, that's what surprised me the most.
She's a compassionate character.
Like, so. I hope people are saying she might get nominated for this. I hope she does.
That would be great.
That would be so cool.
She's very, and yeah, so I went into this I didn't know what I was expecting, but I just went into it sort of like, all right, I'll watch it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I was struck by almost every single aspect of it. Her performance is phenomenal. And I think what struck me the most is, I don't want to call it a blasé approach, but it's sort of the nonchalant approach to abortion in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, treated like the normal everyday human issue that it actually is.
It's not treated like this like
sin.
Yeah, it's not treated as a sin. It's not treated, and I don't want to say it's not treated as a big deal, because it is a big deal in the, you know, the medical sense. But
right, yeah.
But it's just it's matter of fact. It's like, she has to get an abortion, she's going to get an abortion. That's it. There's no like, oh, should I get this? There's none of that in the film.
Another thing I like about that whole abortion angle is that she doesn't decide to keep the child in the end and raise the family with, I forget the
male. I believe it's Goofus of Goofus and Gallant.
I think he's one of the Brooks brothers.
Yeah, Khaki Doofus.
Yeah.
She doesn't keep the baby and start a family with him. She doesn't have the abortion and die and as a martyr.
She just has it. Yeah.
Right. She has the procedure done, and she deals with it like a normal human. And she's so good in this film.
And I love that the abortion happens on screen. It's not like on screen in the sense that you see it, but like you see her getting the abortion done. Like, I liked that they did that, because I feel like, if this were a more Hollywood movie, they would have cut away, and they would have had it. If this were a more Hollywood movie, it would never exist,
because
no one would greenlight a movie like that for a big budget. And I think it takes guts to make a movie like this.
What surprised you the most?
Well, because it was like a New York young
hipster movie, you can say.
I was like expecting a mumblecore rom-com, Lena Dunham, which I love Lena Dunham's films.
Yeah. Right.
And
you just didn't want to see another Lena Dunham.
I just didn't want more of that, because I'm like, all right, I have that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that this wasn't that,
it's its own thing.
It's refreshing.
It's new.
Yeah.
It's she's
and
great.
I was laughing so much, like dying laughing.
It's great to see a movie with just a unique female lead character in it.
Strong female lead character.
They don't make
take
enough
care of herself.
Yeah, they don't make movies like that.
And
like,
her sister, is that her sister or her
mom?
No.
This is her roommate.
Yeah,
played by what the hell is her name?
I don't know.
Was a child.
She was just in Wild too. Yeah. I can't remember her name ever, but she's great in it too. But they're like the focus characters. The dude is kind of third wheel, I would say.
And I kind of like that. Like the dude, the guy, he's sort of like, he's probably the weakest part of the film. But I also liked that she doesn't really need him. Like, I like that.
That's one of the best parts.
Like
she can take or leave his ass.
They sort of end up together at the end, but it's not like, you don't feel like, oh, that's the goal of the movie for her to end up with him. It doesn't matter. She just had, like, he's just a nice guy. Like, I liked that, too.
Gabby Hoffman.
That's her name. Yeah, Gabby Hoffman. Yeah. And there's a scene in the film where Jenny Slate, she goes to tell her mother that she's pregnant and she's going to have an abortion. And that's one of the best acted scenes all year for me. Just both her and the actress playing her mother, they play off each other so well. And it felt realistic. And I don't know. They were just, it blew me away, just that scene in specific.
Yeah. There is like an authenticity to that scene that makes it stand out among like the best
scenes
of
the year.
There's
an honesty to the whole movie. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So definitely that's number two for me. And that's number three for you, Dave.
And number two for me, Obvious Child. So I'll just do my number three then. Yeah. Number three for me is a movie that I had the absolute worst expectations for going into it. It came out in the beginning of summer, and I couldn't believe that I walked out actually liking it. It is Hercules, starring The Rock.
Nice.
Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
Hercules, I thought it was just going to be your typical action epic story,
right,
where they got to fight these monsters, and it's just going to be...
That's how the trailer sold it.
Yeah. These trailers might have been the worst trailers of 2014. Oh, yeah.
With his perfect teeth.
Yes, the Rock screams, "I am Hercules." I mean, we've gone over it many, many times on this show.
At least three. Yes.
And we all howl laughing at that trailer, but the tone of him screaming, "I am Hercules," with his teeth all glistening and perfectly straight, that's the tone of the entire movie. It's funny, and it's supposed to be funny, and it subverts any expectation you would have of a movie like this. They're not epic, mythical warriors. They are essentially hustlers.
Yeah, they're like con artists.
Yeah, they're con artists who con powerful people into thinking that they are these mythical beings that can take care of all their problems just by lying to them, essentially, and they just happen to be strong enough and work well enough as a team to get themselves out of a jam at the last minute every time.
That sounds so – like, I wish it had been sold as that, because I would have been, like, first in line to see it. Like, that sounds interesting.
And it is interesting, and The Rock's fun. Everybody's fun in this. Ian McShane from Deadwood is in it. He's fantastic. He's great. It's just a really fun movie, and everybody's clearly having a good time on set, too. I don't think anybody had any expectation that the studio was going to sell this as a an epic, sprawling film.
Right.
So I recommend Hercules. Just watch it. It's fun.
Yeah, I'll definitely get around to watching it.
That's my number three.
Nice. Did I do a number three?
No, you haven't done anything.
Oh, well, I talked about Obvious Child. So my number three is I went into it expecting to like it, but I had no idea I was going to like it this much. And that film is John Wick. So
I still haven't seen that, but it's on my list.
It was a tie. This was a tie between Guardians of the Galaxy and John Wick. But Guardians of the Galaxy, I kind of expected it to be good, so I don't really want to call it a surprise. But John Wick, John Wick, I saw a poster for it before I saw a trailer, and the poster was literally, it's Keanu Reeves' head with a fuse coming off of it, like his head is a bomb, and I saw that trailer, and I was like, holy shit, that's going to be terrible, and then the trailer came out for it, and the trailer, I was amazed at the trailer, because basically the trailer sells it as... John Wick's a hitman. Someone kills his dog. He goes around killing everyone who killed his dog. And that is kind of what the movie is. But after that trailer, I was like, I got to see this. And it's just a fun, silly, weird, unique movie. Like, it builds this entire underworld. Basically, it does what Sin City was trying to do, but it does better. Like, it's this underworld full of these gangland characters, and they're all, like, unique and weird, but... It's such a better movie, and it's like nonstop action. It never lets up, and it's well-made action. It's not like blurry close-ups. It's not terrible shot fight scenes. It's really well-done stuff. Keanu Reeves is really fun in it as John Wick, and I don't know. I'm a dog lover, so I can really relate to a guy who goes around murdering people who killed his dog. So John Wick, I expected it to be goofy, and it was goofy, but it was so much fun. It was one of my favorite films of the year.
I was excited about when you gave it a good review and people were saying this is a fun movie. I was excited that Keanu Reeves was finally doing something that he should be doing.
Yeah,
and not
that samurai movie.
Still, 47 Ronin.
Yeah, terrible.
Just stick with some goofy stuff. Let's do some Bill and Ted type stuff and what have you.
It got great. It was like at 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think. So it got a lot of good press.
That's unbelievable.
So I highly recommend John Wick.
Dave?
Oh, it's my turn.
Yeah, you're back. Better than ever, I hope.
Yeah, I am. Okay, so my number two. We're on number two, right?
Yeah.
Let me look at my list.
What is it? Oh, I don't know.
Just kidding. That was improv.
It's pretty good.
It's flawless. Flawless improv.
I wrote the review for this movie while sitting on a beach, so I don't know if that has something to do with how much I enjoyed it. But Lucy, starring Scarlett Johansson, is a movie that I had so much fun at, like just like the John Wick and Hercules. So that must be a common theme.
These three movies have that in common, where people went into it not expecting anything, and they enjoyed the hell out of it.
I expected utter dog shit from this, and it was so much fun. Just sitting, and it was the summer. I'm sitting there in those recliner chairs. Yeah. Just it was like such an action movie atmosphere, and then I had that fun with this movie because it did things that other action movies didn't, which I loved about it.
Right.
And I love that it was a solid female lead. Scarlett Johansson plays the title character, Lucy, who starts it, and it has a similar plot line to Transcendence, which was on my most disappointment list. She starts transcending mankind because she gets some kind of...
she unlocks 90% of her brain or something, which is not...
The science is sound.
Yeah.
Can we all just agree?
Absolutely. It's really possible, and...
It's solid science. Yeah.
The best part of the movie is that it literally transcends that bullshit and still is fun.
Yeah.
Like
that's pretty powerful because that trope drives me nuts that 90% of your brain is unused.
Did Luc Besson direct this or just produce
it? No, he directed
it. Okay, because I like him as a director. Like, I love... This movie's goofy as hell, but I love The Fifth Element. That movie is silly bullshit, but I like that movie.
And
so,
The Professional.
Yeah, I love The Professional, which I think is a little more serious, but I love that movie too. So,
and this has the tone of both of those movies
right.
in a weird way.
Right.
But then there's like one scene at the end that bugs me with Lucy, but other than that, the whole film is just nonstop fun.
Yeah.
And it's funny at parts.
Yeah.
It's original too. They do some cool stuff that's never been done before.
I'll have to watch it because it
have
definitely.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have seen
you
it.
Did, see
did you
it?
Like it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, I'll watch it.
I didn't love it, but I did like it.
All right.
All right. So my number two was Obvious Child.
Right.
So we'll skip right.
It was it. Obvious.
It was obvious. All right. Well, enough.
And
of
my number
jokes.
Two was also Obvious Child. So
Dave, it was obvious.
Yeah. Thanks. So Dave, go to your number one, please.
I was going to ask if you wanted to hit him again. My number one. This is Jeff speaking.
Oh.
Is Edge of Tomorrow.
Well, that's my number one, too, Jeff.
All right.
So we're simpatico.
All right. So Edge of Tomorrow, I went in, again, expecting nothing because Tom Cruise has kind of fallen out of public favor. Right.
And I still like Tom Cruise, but
I don't hate him, but I just find his – I don't like the Mission Impossible movies. I didn't see Oblivion at the time.
I had seen Oblivion at the time, and I did not like it. So.
Yeah. So I went in expecting the typical – Tom Cruise sci-fi schlag.
I blew the joke.
Well, you'll have to tell
me later. I'm not even going to attempt to rectify that. Continue, Jeff.
You were cruising for a Tom Cruise. Is that what you're going to say?
Well, I was going to make a cruise control joke, but...
Oh, boy.
Jeff, come back.
I was out of that handgun. So Edge of Tomorrow, I was expecting nothing. It was so fun, so funny, action-packed, good action, great cinematography. This film looks fantastic. The characters are great. There's a strong female lead.
Right.
Tom Cruise plays a weasel.
I think the strongest thing Edge of Tomorrow does is it makes Tom Cruise a jerk. Like, he's not playing his usual...
coward. He's a coward, and it's awesome.
Because usually Tom Cruise, he always plays like, he's the best at everything. Look at him. And in this movie, that's not what he is. He doesn't want to be doing any of this. He's forced into the situation.
And also, he doesn't learn to be the best. He just learns to remember steps that he has to take following this great female lead.
It's like cheating on a test, basically, where you write the answers on your hand. That's what he's doing. And the best part of this movie is Emily Blunt as, I forget her name, but the character's name, but she is so good in this movie. I've always been sort of like, I was aware of Emily Blunt, but I was never like, oh, whatever. But I was sort of like, who cares about Emily Blunt?
That's how I am.
But after seeing her in this movie, I want her to be in like everything now. She was so good in this. Mm-hmm. She's badass. She's a sword that's made of a helicopter blade, which is awesome.
And she's the one that he has to cheat off of, essentially, to pass the test.
It's
great.
It's a fun...
Alien designs are gorgeous.
Yeah, it's not like your generic alien. It's like they sort of look like, you know, Cthulhu, where they have tentacles and stuff.
And their movements are... It's this staggered movement.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fantastic. It's so original.
It was different. Yeah, it wasn't like... When I heard about the plot of it, where it's like... I was like, that's Groundhog Day with sci-fi.
Yeah, that's what I thought, especially since it was based on a property called All You Need Is Kill, which just still irks me to my core. And it has been renamed on DVD to Live, Die, Repeat because I don't know.
Yeah, this film was marketed terribly. Like, I don't think they knew what they had on their hands because
that movie,
a great movie.
It has such weight too. Like there are emotional fucking scenes in that. Yeah, like yeah. when Tom, there's a scene where Tom Cruise is trying to explain to Emily Blunt, like, and it's the first time you're seeing this scene, but he's been here before, and he's like, "We never make it to the helicopter." Yeah. Like, and that's that bit of dialogue just gets me in that film because it's like, fuck, he's done this so many times, he knows every possible outcome.
And there's also like a lot of humor in this, and it's great. It's funny. It's I love a movie that doesn't take itself too seriously. And
right,
that,
the this tone's perfect.
Yeah, this film finds the right tone for a film about a man reliving the same day over and over again. It's this film.
Yeah,
like there's a joke where Tom Cruise has to roll out of like a like a squadron. And he does it like one time and the truck hits him. And it's the only time in the film where usually when he dies, it cuts to him waking up. It's the only time where the film keeps going. And Bill Paxton's character is like a drill sergeant. He's like, what the fuck was he thinking? And
it's you get a reaction shot. Yeah. And unlike History of the World Part 1, this is actually worth showing.
Yeah. Bill Paxton is great in this too. I loved seeing Bill Paxton in this because I like Bill Paxton. It was fun to have him in. Sort of like playing off his aliens role. Where he's so.
Had the ending been just slightly more depressing, this would have been my favorite movie of the year.
You guys are jerk offs because I thought the ending was fine.
I did like the. A lot of people hate the ending. I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
It's a fun action.
It's sort of a cheat, but I didn't mind.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. It's so well made. I wish this movie had been one of the biggest hits of the summer because. I hate that it didn't do well because it sends the wrong message
to
studios.
It didn't bomb, but...
It just didn't do as well as it should have, and it sends the message to studios like, oh, we shouldn't make smart sci-fi movies because no one goes to see them.
More
and
comic book. More Marvel, I mean.
Yeah, please. Please, more fucking superheroes, please.
So that was our number one. What was your number one?
My number one biggest surprise of the year was Locke, starring Tom Hardy.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Just because from go, like the idea of this movie being the entire film takes place in a single car ride.
Boy, does that sound dreadful.
Yeah. And even the first 10 minutes of the movie, I was still not sold on it. And that was the biggest surprise, that it turned me around while watching it. Like I was surprised in transit.
Nice.
Man, you're firing
all the bombs out. Bombs away, right, boys?
Yeah.
So it's you've all seen it at this point.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It's Tom Hardy driving a car,
and
that's the whole plot.
Great. He's very good.
Yeah. Just the way he acts and him talking to an empty back seat.
I love the voice he does because it's not his normal voice.
Yeah.
I love when Tom Hardy does voice. I know everyone laughs at that Bane voice, but I fucking love that Bane voice, and I love his voice in this too.
I'm resisting every urge to
don't you dare do
like
it.
Bane,
I like when he does Alvin in Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah, he's really good at that.
Very powerful.
And when he's Mr. Burns on The Simpsons.
Anyway,
yeah. Did you trivia? Tom Hardy has always been the voice of Mr. Burns on The Simpsons.
That's unbelievable.
Excellent.
Okay, that didn't work.
That's pretty good. Is that his Wayne Campbell impression?
Dave was eating s'mores as he did that impression.
The logistics of this movie impressed me the most. Like how would you film this?
Yeah,
I
don't know how they did this specifically because it's shot. It's never boring. The camera
is always moving.
Yeah, when I watch it, the one thing I notice is even when it's just him sitting in a car, the camera never sits still.
Yeah.
Even if it's like a straight on shot, the camera's always sort of like rotating, sort of.
It's not very impressive.
Not in the Michael Bay way. I mean, in a more subtle way.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film.
Yeah.
And it's just, like you said, it's Tom Hardy in a car for 90 minutes.
Yeah, and he's just talking to his kids, and he's just killing it every time. It was directed by Steven Knight, who's going to now direct the next World War Z movie.
Ugh.
Which is the only thing that is going to get me in the theater for that World War Z sequel.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. Spielberg also called this his favorite movie of the year in the year, and that got me excited for it, but just seeing it surprised the hell out of me.
Obviously, he hadn't seen The Best Man's Holiday.
Was that last year?
I don't fucking know. Who cares about that movie?
We'll never know. So, yeah, those are our biggest surprises, biggest disappointments of 2014.
Yeah, if you're feeling up to the task, why not tweet us your biggest surprises and disappointments at cutprintfilm, all one word, at. On Twitter.
Yes, that's on the twitter.com website. I don't know if you're all familiar with that.
One word is not part of our title.
At Cutprint Film.
Yeah, or you can find us on MySpace. No, you can't.
All right. So should we recommend some movies?
No.
I recommend we do.
Thank you.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Good Lord.
And if so, it begins.
Yeah, so all month for December, our Movie Rec songs will all be Christmas themed. So be on the lookout.
And they'll all be the Jingle Bell Dog.
Every week.
But it'll be different somehow. I guess I'll start.
Please do.
My pick is keeping with the Christmas spirit. It's a Christmas movie. And I hope I'm not stepping on your toes here, Chris.
Schindler's List?
Oh, no, it's not Schindler's
There's
List.
There's some snow in that movie.
Yes, there is. My pick
Ash.
Oh.
My pick is the Christmas film. It's a Finnish film. It's called Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale.
I actually have yet to see this.
Okay,
I saw a trailer for it. I just never got around to seeing it.
I was afraid you were going to say I was going to pick that.
No.
What is this?
Okay, so this is... Have you seen it?
No.
All right. It's directed by Jaumari Helander.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. He's a Finnish gentleman, and he's directing this film called Big Game that comes out next year. That's about...
I want to see this, yeah, where Samuel Jackson's the president.
Yeah, Samuel Jackson is the president, and he goes down, his plane goes down in Finland, and a young boy saves him. And that comes out next year.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it sounds... If you watch this movie, you will be even more excited for it. Rare Exports takes place on Christmas Eve in northern Finland, and an archaeological dig has just unearthed the real Santa Claus. But this particular Santa isn't the one you want coming to town, boys and girls. I'm reading a synopsis. Please don't think that I did this. When the local children begin mysteriously disappearing, young Pitari and his father, a reindeer hunter by trade, capture the mythological being and attempt to sell Santa to the misguided leader of a multinational corporation sponsoring the dig. Santa's elves, however, will stop at nothing to free their fearless leader from captivity.
God, I gotta finally watch this.
What ensues is a wildly humorous nightmare. God. It's so good.
I remember seeing the trailer for it, and I was like, I gotta see that, and I just never got around to seeing it.
The creature design for Santa Claus is something out of a fucking nightmare. It is terrifying. But this movie, the tone is silliness, too.
Right.
There's a funny tone, almost like The Guest. I'm not going to say exactly, like, the tongue's in the cheek, but it's not sticking through.
Okay.
What do the elves look like?
Oh, they're horrific.
I'm trying to find a picture
is
of
this,
them.
It used to be on Netflix. Is it still there?
I don't know. Where I saw it.
I'll have to watch it.
It's so, so good. Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale.
Give him an enema.
Oh, that was from...
The endless enema jokes from Dracula Dead and Loving It. I'll go... My pick is a film from earlier this year. It is The One I Love. They put this on Netflix, so I finally got around to watching it. And I really liked it. I liked it more than I thought I would. It stars Mark Duplass and Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men. They're a married couple, and basically they're having troubles. And so they go to see their therapist, played by Ted Danson, and he sends them off to this...
Ted Danson stars in this for exactly 1.5 minutes.
Yeah, he's barely in it. He sends them off to like a cottage, sort of a ghetto, a vacation house, if you will. And I don't want to give away, for anyone who hasn't seen it, what happens, but weird stuff happens. And it's... I don't know, I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to. A lot of it rests on the performances. Elizabeth Moss is very good in this. Mm-hmm. And Mark Duplass is good too. But I liked Elizabeth Moss more. They play off each other really well, and I liked the way they handled the mystery elements of the film. Like, I liked that it was vague enough without being too vague.
Yeah.
Like, I liked that. Like, you could have... a shittier movie would have made it even more vague, and you would just be like, what the fuck is going on? But I liked how they handled it in this movie. And
my problem with the film falls into the end, where they start trying to tie it up.
Yeah.
I think they went a little too far in tying it up. I could have stuck with that tone they were going with the entire way.
Also, there's a final twist, which I fucking saw coming before the movie even started, so I wish they hadn't done that.
Yep.
But I think the good outweighed the bad. So I really liked it. It's on Netflix. You should check it out if you have, you know.
I love this one.
Yeah,
you're like, it completed that between Coherence Honeymoon and this, it like felt like a new season of Twilight Zone that I was watching.
It was a really good year for indie sci-fi.
Yeah, like, or like Enemy, a movie like that.
Yeah.
It has that like doubling aspect to it. So yeah. So yeah, the one I love is you.
Give me an enema. Give me an enema.
Thanks.
Give me an enema. Give me an enema.
Sorry, there seems to be a bug here.
It's just keep giving me enemas. Oh.
I have a virus.
So this is also a movie that came out earlier this year. A Most Wanted Man, starring Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I've yet to see it.
Same here, have not seen it. Tell us about
it. So there are two great things about this movie. It is set in Hamburg, which in the fall might be the most beautiful city I've ever seen on film. Like the things they do with the camera in Hamburg just make it look awesome.
Is it as beautiful as Cheeseburg?
Oh, God damn it. So upset that just happened.
Not me.
Because apparently Hamburg is where Hamburg, Germany, obviously.
Obviously.
is where they planned 9/11. Mm-hmm. I didn't know this. So since then, this embarrassed the German government so much that they are like crazy about terrorism in that city.
That couldn't go wrong at all.
They essentially, you know, slap a hood on every Muslim they see and drag them into a dark alley.
Sounds progressive.
Philip Seymour Hoffman plays a German spy officer who runs this rogue squad of guys who are keeping people safe, but doing it through building relationships with the Muslim community rather than
harassing
them. Than killing everyone, dragging them off to Gitmo. And it's about him setting up this really elaborate scheme to get to the next level. You know what I mean? Like almost like how you don't arrest drug dealers because
they're small time. Yeah.
But the Americans coming in and fucking it up.
Americans.
The second aspect of this movie that's amazing is Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's just so good in this role. And it's slightly off the first couple seconds when you hear him doing that German voice.
He wasn't an actor. He usually did accents.
But after like 10 minutes of it, you start seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman as a fucking German. And that blew my mind. And it also made me angry about Valkyrie, Tom Cruise, not doing the German accent.
Right.
Because this proved that a good actor could do it and sell it.
Yeah.
The other actors in the movie aren't giving that great of a performance.
I forget who is, like, Robin Wright. Is she
Robin Wright's in it, and she would be the second best actor in the movie.
I forgot who else is in it. I don't know.
What's her name? That girl.
Oh, I know.
Oh, I love her.
She's the one with the mohawk, usually.
No, I'm looking through it right now. For some reason,
she's the one with the mammaries, I believe.
Her name should be first here, but it's not.
This is going well.
Christopher Walken's in it.
What?
He's playing Captain Hook.
Is he really in it?
No.
Oh, it blew my mind. I
meant to say Willem Dafoe, and I said Christopher Walken.
They rhyme.
Sometimes they're the same person in my head.
Well, gotcha. They both are really Captain Hook.
Willem Dafoe's in it, and he doesn't give a very... Oh, it's Rachel McAdams.
I don't generally like her. People love her, and I don't get it.
She's not great in it.
I mean, she was great in Red Eye.
Willem Dafoe is like a good actor, but he's just weird in this. Like,
I think he's a great actor. But
he is a great actor, but in this, he just doesn't fit.
Well, he's a weird-looking guy, so...
But, you know, see it. See it just to see Philip Seymour Hoffman's last meaty performance.
I'll definitely get around to seeing it.
What was it called?
Most Wanted Man.
All right.
Well,
baby, it's cold outside.
Here, put on this jacket.
Well, that was the show. I hope you guys liked it.
I hope you didn't, actually. I hope you never come back.
If you didn't, I don't know why you're even still listening. But, So there's some stuff you should check out. You should check out our website. It's cutprintfilm.com. We got a lot of stuff on there.
Editorials, interviews.
Do we have any Christmas-related material coming up?
None. We do.
There's plenty of Christmas-related material. This week, we start our 12 Flops of Christmas series.
Ah, yes.
Where every working weekday, we will be releasing a new flop.
Yeah.
What do we start
Christmas
with?
Christmas Eve. It's a secret.
Oh,
we
it
start
is?
Start Tuesday. Yeah. So
you could unwrap that little gift on Tuesday.
Yeah, open up your advent calendar and pull
and
it out.
Throw it into the fire. We also have some other stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. Plugs, right?
Yeah. We're going to have, you know, most important, just go to Cut Print Film. I don't care if you do the next stuff we're going to talk about, but first and foremost, go to cutprintfilm.com.
Check out joystickjerks.com. That's a podcast about video games.
Is it?
It is.
Check out antifanboy.com. That's the podcast about comic books.
Is it?
Yes.
All right.
It is.
I like how you're questioning us.
I had a stroke. I can't remember anything.
Sorry if we're a little rusty this week. That was our first break after 39 straight weeks.
Yeah. I hope you missed us as much as I missed you.
Yes. I missed every one of you.
Yeah.
So,
we're
going well.
We're flailing over here. So that's really all we got. So again, cutprintfilm.com. Look us up on Twitter. Talk to us. We're out there. We're waiting for you. Find us on Facebook. Read our reviews. Read our editorials.
Hey, please give us a good review. Despite the way this show's ending, we actually enjoy doing this.
Yeah, so look us up on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review. Give us a 6-star review.
Hey, how about a 7-star review? If you can figure out the coding
involved
in that. Yeah,
if you can hack that algorithm,
why
please.
Not?
And send all your cookies right to my house. Because I'm going to eat them.
Ho, ho, ho. Please, don't shit down my chimney. Just give me cookies.
Make all the gifts out to Dave. I'll make sure they get to
the right Dave.
The right Dave.
The right brothers?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should stop before we get any worse at this.
We gotta blast the whole time the music goes.
Maybe this shouldn't be a 14-minute song. I don't know. Just a suggestion.
I'll send it upstairs, see what they say.
That went really well, I think.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Smooth as silk. It's still going.
Help us.